Hey guys, this episode ran pretty long. It's 3 hours, so we're cutting into multiple parts. This was part one. Next week will be part two of our episode with first ever guests, Bat Eater Music, and legendary hip-hop producer Cranberry Dave.
What's up, everybody? I'm Riley the Vizier. I'm a podcast producer, video editor, rapper.
I'm Trixie the Golden Witch, one of the world's most famous anime fans, cranking out them YouTube videos on the Yig Studio channel.
And I'm the absolute unit. It's the It's Been Sowed, and I draw the most good out there and review movies the bestest.
I'm Bird Store, also known as the Sledgehammer, and you're going to buy me a truck.
And our first guest for the podcast.
Hey, I'm Bat Eater, rapper, producer. I know more about hip-hop than you do.
And we have another first guest for the podcast. You guys get to battle it out later to see who was first and who was second. It's a big deal, and one of you is a bitch.
I'm legendary hip-hop producer Cranberry Dave, legendary hip-hop producer and creative co-director on Hurricane Season by Vizier and the Golden Witch. YouTube.com/CranberryDave, SoundCloud.com/CranberryDave, and anywhere else fine records are sold.
Hey. Oh yeah, plugs up front. And this is the new Void Gazers podcast. We have opinions about things, and now you can subscribe and download the podcast to hear those opinions. What is up, everybody?
Hi.
Hey,
you're doing great.
So we have a loaded show today here. In order to make it less chaotic, we're going to do a real panel format. Trixie and I are going to talk, and then we're going to pass it around the room. So let's start with Trixie's week. Trixie, you've put out like 4 fucking videos in a row. Well, 2 streams, right? 2 streams and 3 videos this week.
Yeah, I got inspired. It was partially because of Elden Ring. So I got addicted to Elden Ring immediately because Bird bought it. I had given up hope on being able to play this game. I hoped this game wasn't going to come out soon. Like, in my mind, I kept extending the due date of the game because I was like, when it comes out, it's going to consume my life and it's going to be all I want to do. But I kind of needed that at the same time because I'm a person that doesn't really have hobbies. Like, everything I do, I try to do for work. And so
I can't relate at all. That's crazy. That doesn't have any kind of familiarity with me.
Yeah, so and it could be a fucking pain because like I like really weird obscure stuff. Like I want to just be like finding an old NES game and playing it and digging it up just for my own personal enjoyment. And then like it becomes okay, how do I twist this into a narrative I can like sell to the internet, you know? And any time that I don't get something out of it, it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to save the fact that I had anything, you know, whatever opinions I have, however minute, I'll save it and try to slot it in sometime later down the line. Like, at least I have this knowledge. But, like, you know, finding a game that's like, I actually could play this for, like, hundreds of hours and never get sick of it. I'll never get sick of talking about it. It's going to have a community forever. I just have to figure out how to, like, break into that community and get those people to watch my videos about it.
Good plan.
So I made a couple of them and they didn't get very many views. And it's really, it's sad because the only gaming content I've ever done that has ever been at all successful has been about the Dark Souls games. Particularly, I have a video called Dark Souls versus Bloodborne, the player character. It's got like 800,000 views or something like that. So, people were asking me to talk about this game, and the game's kind of new. Not a lot of people have gotten very far in it, but it's
right.
It's sold 12 million fucking copies in the first couple weeks, so it's like one of the most successful games ever already, which is crazy to think that like something that started as this incredibly niche thing that like I enjoyed with my friends a decade ago is now like one of the biggest gaming franchises of all time. And I'm in a position where I actually get to talk about it. But because the first couple of videos I made didn't do very well, I was like, man, it sucks that my channel is dead and that, like, you know, these videos could have had a shot if the channel were alive.
If those jerk ops didn't pull the plug at YouTube headquarters.
Yeah.
On your algorithm. That's the only thing that happened.
It really do be like that. I found this video of Sun Tzu quotes. Called like Sun Tzu quotes you should know before you're like when you're young instead of old. I listened to all those. I got really inspired by a bunch of Sun Tzu quotes. And then I realized that the latest anime season had just ended. And I was like, perfect. This is you know, it's an opportunity to just watch through some 12 episode shows that only take like a couple hours to burn right through it and write out a script. I'll talk about like whatever the most popular shows that just ended are, because that's a formula that's worked for me in the past. And it's kind of like I'm just taking a whole bunch of ideas that were successful before, refining them and putting them back in front of people and just kind of being like, hey, this is what you guys wanted, right? Like, since you like it and it's even better than it was before, make it popular, please. And it seems to be working. People are getting excited. And the latest video I did, I think, makes it clear, like, what I'm trying to do. And it's gotten, like, I put this video out, like, 2 hours ago, and it's got, like, 1,000 comments or something. Let me look how many fucking comments are on this video.
That's not bad. I know we all watched that video, so if anybody has any takes on it or anything they want to talk to you about the video, now would be a great time for that.
I can throw one in right now.
Before I blow out of proportion, it's 167 comments on a 2,155 view video as of a couple hours. But the comments are long as shit.
So you just have dyslexia.
No, it just felt like I'd read 1,000 comments because I've, like...
A lot of them are, like, paragraphs.
Some of them are several pages because it's people, like, giving their entire history of everything.
Anime?
Yeah, their whole history of participation with anime community, which the surprising part, actually reading the comments, is that the majority of these people have not participated in any anime community online. They either just talk about it with their friends or just watch anime YouTube videos, and they, like, aren't really that interested in a community conversation. The ones who are, almost all are on Discord at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of is what I thought, which is interesting because it raises the question of, like, well, okay, if there is no central community to appeal to, how do you appeal to all these decentralized communities and find them all, get them to care about your content? So that'll be an interesting puzzle to solve.
I am vastly interested in your journey on YouTube because not a lot of people have the arc you're going through. Like, I know that I'm always talking about it, like, with you in private, but I'm really interested in the... like, the perception of the failed YouTuber. Like, the rise and fall videos that you made are about people who still have millions of views, like, a month. Like, it's not... We live in this, like, bullshit, like, paparazzi culture where it's like... Well, sometimes people who get famous actually fall, and then nobody notices it or pays attention to it.
Yeah.
You would have to, like... It's interesting, there's not videos about your fall.
There were videos about my fall before it actually happened. That's the thing.
Right, well, okay, like, yeah, that's what I mean, right? There's not like ones now that your algorithm is fucked and that your channel is getting no views. Right. They were made a long time ago when they weren't, like, true.
Well, and it was when it was... Because the point of them was to piggyback off the fact that I was popular. That
it's very interesting.
That people were searching my name, and therefore you could get, you know, videos about how I suck now or whatever. And maybe some of those videos convinced some people to distance themselves from my channel. But I also would always make responses that usually got even more views, and... You know, I bodied a lot of people when they came at me like that. Which wasn't always a success. Like, some people just don't like the drama at all. And that burned a lot of people away from me. But some people love the drama and were there for it. So, like, I can't look at any of that as being the thing that broke the channel. It really is that I fucked up the way that YouTube, like, pushes my channel. And I understand, like, YouTube has kind of reset itself to... when I look at my analytics and I look at the way YouTube communicates with me, it treats me like I am a channel that has, like, 25,000 subscribers or something. Like, because it's only looking at the view counts. So it's not treating me like I am a huge channel. It treats me like I'm a small channel, and it advises me, you know, like, what I'm doing right and what I can do to grow, like, in the same way it would if I was growing a brand new channel that was at these statistics, you know, just without the sub count. It's only the bloated sub count that makes it look like, you know, like the channel should be bigger than it is. But according to YouTube, it's exactly as big as it should be, you know.
Like, we have an understanding of demographics a lot of people don't pay attention to, but those are dead accounts or they're alts or they're, like, dead people who don't use the platform.
Literal dead people.
Like, that happens. That happened to PewDiePie's sub count. Like, it's massively inflated. His ratio is about as bad as yours. Like, you look at a PewDiePie video with 7 million views, and you're like, well, that kind of looks like shit with the sub count. I know we all watched your most recent video, and I've been watching all of your content lately. I think you're on a good run. I think you've got a good idea of where you're going right now, and this run has been effective. I want to know what everyone else thinks of your newest video, or just whatever. Hey, Bat Eater, what do you think?
I'll tell you.
You first.
Okay.
I'll call the guest first, and then the main.
See, this is why I am the first guest of the show.
He's got you there, Dave.
Fuck you, Dave.
I suppose so.
Dave agrees with him instantly. Yep, you are the first guest. All right.
I'm already the firstborn. I don't need to be the first everything.
First the worst, second the best. Come on.
Best producer.
So, Bat Eater, so you've been a fan of Trixie in the past. Feel free to talk about your content viewing relationship with DigiBro and then with Trixie. And it'll be interesting to hear like a sort of an outsider perspective on this stuff, because obviously we don't have the outsider perspective on it. We're the ones ruining Trixie.
I'll start it with one of the things that Trixie has said that stuck in my mind for a very, very long time when I first heard her say it was, I am passionate about content discussion. I think it was specifically anime discussion, but whenever I started seeing her content through that lens, it became, I don't know if like parasocial or not that kind of, but it felt two-way in a sense where it's like listening to someone just gush about something they really care about. And in her last video, she mentions calling her cousin when she was 12 and just ranting and like info dumping all this good, like just passion and love for this one art form. And that's what I loved about the video. So there was a kind of cyclical nature of watching this where it's like, yeah, this is why I love this shit. This is why I love watching this. And it made me start missing boards, like just going somewhere and getting into an argument with someone you've never met to defend like your girl or like defend your show or defend a style of show with someone. I loved it. A+ video.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you made it to that ending bit, because I know people who, as soon as they hear the change in voice that leads into the, like, I'm Trixie the Golden Witch, you can find more of my writing, they like, immediately go to the next video, like, no hesitation. So I was like, I don't know if anybody's going to hear this little emotional bit at the end. But
it's so important. It's the fucking foundational piece that holds that video, where it stops it from just being like, oh, someone on the internet bitching about, why can't I find people to talk about this with anymore? Yeah. To like, this is why I give a fuck about it. Like, this is why it's important to me.
This is like tangentially related, but I feel like a lot of people missed the punch of the Ralph video because they didn't finish the Ralph video. And at the end, Ralph drives away drunk, tweeting a quote from Training Day. And that's from the scene when in Training Day, he was like
about to get killed. Literally
it's the ending
to be
scene.
Gunned down in the streets.
He tweets out, King Kong ain't got shit on me, but the irony of the phrase is that it is when King Kong does in fact have shit on you that you deploy it. And that was the analytical punch to that video that nobody watched because it was after the
fight. That was the dropped your dogs moment of it, was him being a massive lunatic.
It's so funny. Like, well, he's the type of person who views a literally me character and goes, I am literally that. Like, oh yeah, I'm Travis Bickle. Oh yeah, I'm the bad guy from Training Day because I don't understand symbolism.
That's my favorite quote ever, was fucking Null or what. He was watching the stream after Ralph leaves court and he had, you know, beat the charges or whatever, and he's just playing God's plan dancing, and fucking Noel pauses the video and goes, you see that man bouncing around? You think he learned his fucking lesson? I don't think that motherfucker learned anything. Can apply that to every part of Ralph's life.
And anybody like him, like, he's a very strong archetype.
Mm-hmm.
I maintain that there's actually like 16 people, and that we're all like variations of the people
really,
that we
Carl
watch.
Oh, really, Carl Jung? Yeah. Tell me more about it.
I don't believe any of that shit. I'm not going to be like a girl.
No, I believe
about
my
it.
Version, which is smarter and newer.
Right. I've observed about 16 types of people, and then there's
let me
like,
tell you about this neurotyping chart I devised.
That was you. You're the neurotyping person. No, but like, you don't have to be a scientist about it to just agree that there's like a set of load screen options of character select.
Yeah,
and we all fall into some shitty fucking archetype. And then the people I love hating the most and like bullying are the people who reject their archetype, like go around like, oh, I'm a warrior. Like you're an elf. What do you mean?
Right.
You can't use the dwarven swords. You're an elf. Yeah. Why are you black? This is Tolkien's what? Elves. You can't be black. You're an elf or whatever. It's that mentality. Like, you can't just spend all, like, what if in the Lord of the Rings show, right? The guy just insists he's not black. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah. He just insists, oh, I'm actually not black. I just have like a rare skin thing. There's not black elves.
Didn't we already have black elves? Weren't they called Uruk-hai? Can I a high weren't five from elves? Anybody in the I'm group, sorry, was please? It,
weren't dark elves canceled for being a black analog?
Oh, no, that was like, orcs. They were fucking saying like, oh, no, if you, you know, whatever. I'm stalling it. Go ahead.
Well, in Community, the episode that got the blackface episode was Chang doing a dark elf, not even an orc. And that was like a problem. Whatever. Dark elves are coming back. Lord of the Rings is great. I agree that that end bit on all of Trixie's videos usually has the most punch, though. I think it's just a thing she does with her content. You tend to save some little tidbit at the end for your mic drop.
It really came out of I wanted to have a catchphrase, because I used to end all my videos with thanks again for watching and I'll see you in the next one, which is just kind of generic. You know, like I think MKBHD says almost the exact same thing at the end of each of his videos. But it was just like something I had happened to keep doing from the very start. So like from the Digibrony very start. So it was like, why drop it when it's such an easy way? It just lends off the video so well. I thank the audience, and then I ask them to come back. You know, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
You know, just the fact that it's not really a catchphrase, and like when I was sort of rebooting everything about the channel and like, all right, I'm coming back to anime in a big way. I've got the anime alphabet series. Like, what's a timeless catchphrase that just says anime forever? Oh, wait, right. Anime forever. Let's just say that. I like to say some combination of either never forget or always remember, or always remember to never forget, or never forget to always remember. Anime forever.
Never stop never forgetting.
Yeah, never stop always remembering.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say about that video, Bed Eater, before we move to our second first guest?
Yeah, I won't take up too much time. I just wanted to point out, again, one of the reasons why I like this video so much is it brings me back in a good way. I've always kind of seen Trixie's content in the same kind of world I see, like, and not in quality, mind you, but like, say, a Nostalgia Critic or a fucking Irate Gamer or an AVGN. It's just shit I grew up watching and loving and, you know, talking to my friends about.
Who are you saying has better quality when you make that?
Trixie. Trixie, number one. I'm on the podcast. Trixie's number one. Above all, fuck PewDiePie. Fuck. All right. Anyways, fucking.
Hell yeah.
I remember me and my friends, and this is going to be such a fucking cringy story, in fucking high school in like freshman year or something like that. We were in the lunchroom just calling everyone a punk bitch because that was what fucking Trixie called this other anime YouTuber.
Punk bitch motherfucker.
Yeah, punk bitch. Yes. So here's the thing, right? The day that dropped, my boy Jake, shout out Jake, I love you. He called me and he goes, Kale, I'm not fucking with you. He says, Trixie dropped her control verse.
That's incredible.
I watched that shit. We were going around just calling everybody punk bitch motherfuckers.
Dude, so I gotta tell, just because you brought that up, I'm now going to expose the origin of that phrase, because it is hip-hop.
Please, yes.
And I hadn't realized it for a while, because it's just like a thing. To me, it's a very natural sounding phrase, but like the fact that so many people latched onto it after that video, like everybody was saying punk bitch motherfucker, that dude RC Anime, like, poor guy, could not escape it for a while. And I guess I hadn't realized that it was just not something people say all the time. So there's a song by a band called Head PE that's like a hip-hop rap, rock rap fusion type band from the 2000s, like a sort of new melody. Mm-hmm. And they did a collaboration where it's the lead singer of System of a Down, Serge Tankian, and another rapper dude. So it's like a hip-hop rock rap song where at the breakdown part, the guy just goes, punk, bitch, motherfucker, what? Come on! And I heard this song hundreds of times as a kid, so I think that purely it had to have come from there. And I just didn't even realize. Thought it was just a thing people do. So shout out to Head PE. And the song, We Just Want to Feel Good, or Feel Good, I think it is for short. You can find it on Spotify. but it's censored, so you can't actually hear him say bitch or motherfucker on Spotify.
What? Very obnoxious. Why?
Maybe find the YouTube version, actually.
Punk!
Yeah, it's
just
silent.
It doesn't have the same hit.
No, it does not. But it does make it fun if you know the lyrics to shout over, because it makes you sound way more intense that, like those aren't even the lyrics. You're just shouting bitch over this instrumental for no reason. So anybody listening will think you're that much more hardcore.
Do you have any other thoughts about the video?
No, pass it on to Dave.
Dave?
All right. I really liked your video, Trixie. It was great. Beautiful. Wonderful stuff. The thing I think I got out of it after ruminating on it for an hour or so is that it wasn't intentional, of course, but back in the era that you're describing, there was like a gatekeeping that existed. But mm-hmm. what we have now is a very immoderate use of gatekeeping. Not necessarily by force, true. Just like barrier of access. I don't want to, because that has a negative connotation.
Oh, there was definitely force involved back then. Like it was the community was war, because like, particularly when I got into it, like, I was big into moe and cute girls doing cute things type stuff. And, like, the Western anime fan base had not really ever embraced it as cuteness being the point. Which, like, moe and the threads of everything that it represents have been in anime forever. They've always been there. It's always been core to the identity. It's just changed the way it looked over time. And, like, the hyper fixation and fetishistic detail with which like characters are constructed evolved over time. But like, you know, to a lot of Western anime fans in the 90s, it was about badass manly action. It was like cool giant dudes beating the shit out of people and explosions of blood and swords and pits, you know, and like
mm-hmm.
Those people and the mecha fans like all felt very threatened by the emergence of moe, and that like the most popular shows and stuff getting discussed the most was by people who just weren't even interested in those action shows at all, who, you know, who in fact often you know, there was a third set, I'll say, of anime fans, the more mainstream sort of normie set, that didn't like either of these categories. They saw the old stuff as, you know, trite. But basically, feminists hate all of it. Like, they saw it as all of this is trashy, all of this is fetishistic, all of this is pornography, except for the few things that are, you know, that are not as rough around the edges.
So right, you had, thank like, God those, that's over.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's not, because now, you know, now we've got like a Demon Slayer reaching this whole new audience who's coming in and seeing, you know, the edgy parts of anime culture and being completely offended and, you know, and raising hell about it. And then that starts even more sort of infighting in the community between the people who are like, you know, you children need to stop trying to, you know, enforce your morals on Japanese animation and culture you know nothing about, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's gotten more and more complicated over time, the relationships that people have with the media. But back then, like, it had to be war because those were the only places you could talk about anime, was these like forums and cliques and communities where people are arguing about their different taste. Whereas now, like, those people with different tastes just wouldn't be in the same places, like, except right. for on Twitter. The only place that fighting still happens culturally, really, is on Twitter, because everybody's on there mad because stuff just, you know, enters their view, I guess, that shouldn't be there, and they get upset about it, or they deliberately thrust it in front of each other so that they can be upset about it.
Would you liken this era to Twitter, like the one that you're talking about in the forum era, I guess? Because, like,
yeah.
All I have to go on usually with, like, forum era, quote-unquote, is oral tradition from people like you.
Twitter so. Right now is almost not different at all from 4chan. Like, I don't think...
Yeah.
I don't think any... Like, people act like 4chan is, like, this seedy, disturbing place or something. But, like, the only reason that 4chan ever really had such a harsh reputation is that the B board, the random board... you know, is the most active, and it's the most overloaded with just like young people who are going there to see and post shock stuff. And so it's just nonstop pornography, nonstop like weird, crazy, fucked up images. But it's just the same stuff really being posted over and over again, you know, in order to keep that atmosphere alive. But like everything else about discussion on the internet, you know, fell more into the category of what is now Twitter, or everything else that was discussion on 4chan. So, like, to me, it's not even distinguishable anymore. Like, you can curate your Twitter more so that it doesn't look like 4chan, but, like, you can easily make it look exactly the same.
Interesting.
But, and you know, 4chan would be, like, the harshest forum environment, but I do think that, you know, there's plenty of Twitters that are extremely harsh environments, so... So I think the ability of social media to allow you to block people and kind of create your own little circles is why there's, you know, there's fewer people sort of going to war for their interests, because really they're just hanging out with people who have their interests in the first place. And there's enough of those people now, which is kind of good for everybody.
Yeah. And I mean, Twitter is really, really good at putting you in the bubble you want, like you subconsciously like want to be in, because like, a friend of mine recently started a new account after being suspended, and he realized after like a day or two of, you know, following the same people and like having similar takes, that he was just in all of the same circles again, just immediately.
And I'm glad your friend has started to branch out on Twitter and follow artists.
It's great.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, I'm very proud of
him. What's your friend's Twitter account so people can follow your friend?
Twitter.com/DaveCranberry, I believe.
Sounds like a cool guy.
It kind of sounds like your friend is ripping off your bit, Dave.
Lots of people do that. There's at least three clones of Cranberry Dave out there.
Yeah.
He's popular. He's a legendary hip-hop producer. Okay, Bird?
Yeah, I'm not Cranberry Dave. I don't know who Cranberry Dave is. For legal reasons, I'm Hamburger Larry. Twitter, don't at me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've also created other Twitter accounts, but I've never had as much luck with getting recommended stuff I like. Most of what I end up following on Twitter comes from retweets. It's like someone retweets something I think is cool. I investigate that account, and if I like enough of their stuff, then I'll follow it. But YouTube, Twitter itself, the algorithm, for whatever reason, has always fucking sucked at finding me stuff I care about. Instagram is okay. TikTok is weirdly good. TikTok seems to understand me in a way that other social media doesn't.
Trixie means fashion. Let's not have any theories. The other stuff.
No, for real, fucking ideas. TikTok has that Chinese fucking super brain is computer like the shit.
Child predator app, Trixie.
I don't know who, why, I don't know who thinks that or why, but
everyone thinks it. It's true. It's true.
TikTok
you can twerk at 14 and it's legal.
Wait, hold on.
You just do it on TikTok.
I've never seen, TikTok doesn't, I don't see thirst videos on TikTok.
What?
Well, that's the difference I have, it's unusable for me because when I use it, I'm following Tony and John and The Dick Show. Yeah. And like these TikTok comedy things, and instead my feed is just like women doing TikTok trends. And it's unfucking bearable. And half of them have to be underage.
Most of my feed is people doing self-therapy. It's like,
what's that mean?
Like, couldn't get out of bed today because I'm so depressed. Like that kind of stuff. And then like a funny joke about it. Like,
oh yeah, it's just like self-deprecating. Like,
yeah, it's mostly like people joking about the mental illnesses they have. Or like, you know, somehow visually or artistically representing the state of having whatever strange personality they have. Maybe it's just because I'm fascinated with people and like, I want to know what their take is on their, you know, state of mind, but like,
yeah,
it is a lot of self-therapy in my feed. And then there's like, parkour chicks. Cause I just like to watch girls jump up buildings and fantasize about being able to do it. And gymnastics usually to inspire me to work out.
And yeah, then, you're a monkey. We got some video footage of you jumping around shit.
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't been using TikTok and getting inspired and working out or jumping on anything. I've just been sitting in my chair developing back problems lately. But, you know, it is what it is. You got to work sometimes.
I
want
to bring things back around to music. I just have you and Bad Eater and Dave talk all at the same time about, like, music and stuff. You know, yes. I'm trying to figure out this guest format. It feels like empty not having everyone talking at the same time, but obviously everybody knows the chaos of everyone talking at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think so, regardless, this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, but let's have the three of you talk about music, and I might pop in here and there. Mint and Bird have said everything they wanted to say.
Dude.
So we're not really fighting about their attention.
Hold on. Do you mind if I start out the music? I forgot to plug this at the very beginning, and I really, really need to. I made the Sean album with the help of a couple of people, and I'd like to fucking... I never got the chance for anybody to recognize. Fucking Bag of Schmidt, Fraud, Johnson Brown, Sidwin, Travis Touchdown, obviously, Riley. Thank you guys so fucking much for that. But as somebody that put out just... A labor of love, never expected a dollar for it mixtape. I'm really curious to ask you, like, where is your head going whenever you're making music? Do you have, like, an idea, like, this can be a side gig, or is this just pure love for the craft, just ready to go after it?
It's much closer to the second one, for sure, but mostly because I have no idea how to make a career in music. Mm-hmm. I had no connections, no experience. I didn't know anybody. I didn't really look into it that much when I started. And but I've wanted to do music since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Just I had when I was like 10, my favorite band was Linkin Park. So, you know, that's rap and rock. I learned all the songs. I could perform them all exactly to the way they sounded on the album. So, you know, that was where I started developing the skill to be able to rap. And there was also Eminem and Missy Elliott and Ludacris all had, like, you know, top 40 hits around that time that usually mm-hmm. had really fun creative music videos. And that's what drew me to them, was that all three of them just had, like, really funny, wacky, crazy imagery.
Especially Ludacris, man.
Yeah.
Ludacris was going... Ludacris and Missy Elliott both kind of went into that where DaBaby is now, like that cartoonish...
I think he probably was using Missy Elliott's video director, or like, because they worked together on a few songs and stuff.
Was that Director X?
I do not know. I just know that, like, Missy Elliott sort of popularized that style of, like, WTF is going on. They're all wearing like weird outfits and doing crazy dances and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Luda started getting involved there, and then he had, like, the, you know, I'm gonna have big digital arms shit. And then Eminem, you know, playing all these wacky characters, just being offensive. And his raps were the most fun to learn, the most complex. And it's funny because when I learned about him through the Real Slim Shady, and they would only play the first two verses on TRL. So to this day, I still don't really know the third verse that well. But, you know, that's the kind of way I would learn music back then. It was just like they played the same songs every fucking day. So I heard them until I knew them. And I wanted to have a band even when I was like 10. My mom bought me a guitar. I never really learned how to play it. I did not enjoy trying to play guitar. I have tiny hands. I fucking, my fingers didn't, you know, were not prepared. I hated it. So, you know, my desire to be able to make music was always hamstrung by my lack of desire to actually play music. And I wrote a lot of songs intending for them to be like pop or rock or, you know, prog inspired songs in my teens when I was listening to mostly like Tool, Mars Volta, Coheed and Cambria, Opeth, Mastodon, like all these, you know, heavier progressive alternative bands. And then it was like hip hop was always just kind of in the background for me, where, like, you know, because of the fact that I had grown up with some of it, then, you know, if there was a collaboration with a hip hop artist or a rap verse on a rock song, I always thought that was really cool. And I knew a lot of songs individually, but I wasn't into hip hop as a culture. I wouldn't consider myself a fan. You know, there was a few times where I went to inner city schools where, like, on the bus every day, I would hear a certain set of hip hop songs, and usually like one or two hit songs at a time was something I enjoyed and learned. It's usually some corny pop shit like Grills or any T-Pain song.
I got a quick question real quick. Unsprung. How fucking rock hard emotionally were you whenever you saw the first track on I'll Sleep When You're Dead by LP having two of the members from fucking Mars Volta on it? That right there is a perfect, like, clash.
I did not even know that. Actually. Really? I have not seen that.
I just put you on. I'm your crazy. OG.
I didn't know that. That makes perfect sense. If anybody was going to collaborate with them, it would have been him. Like, timing-wise, it makes perfect sense.
That album's I hate white rappers so much. There's, like, three that I'm okay with.
Fucking amen, dude. God
damn. There's three you're okay with, and they're all in the call right now. Is that how it goes? Or do we not count as white rappers? Because I don't consider myself a white rapper, personally.
I don't consider you a rapper either.
A rapper.
As far as I'm concerned, I'm in a beautiful call with some WPOCs or whatever. Fucking.
I'm Japanese. Fuck you guys.
Eminem is the definition of bullshit at this point. I was talking with Riley before. And I was like, hey, man, you know, I like all these topics that we're doing on the show. Is it cool if I get like a 2-minute hate on Eminem? And he was like, hey, embarrass yourself on the show. So, yeah, I feel you. But
it's hard when someone's like, oh, Eminem's bad. Like, it's hard to quantify what they mean by that, right?
I can tell you exactly what I fucking mean. It's like when
people say that Drake's not good. I know you can. But it's always an interesting debate because people generally can't do a good job of it. So, like, I have to argue with people who are like, well, Drake sucks, or Drake's not the most successful, or whatever. People have, like, weird things they have against Drake. And it's like, well, he's, like, literally the most commercially successful musician of all time. You can't, like, argue with that. You can say you don't like him.
Oh, no. I have tried to, like, kill all the hater that is in me for anything that's, like, popular. Like, if it's popular and you don't understand it, just accept that there is something there you're not getting, you know? And, like, and if you really, really want to have an opinion about it, try to get it first. If you want to explain to people, like, you know, here's what I think this thing is offering you, and here's, like, something you could listen to that's better, that offers something, like, you know, more robust, maybe, I don't know, you could make that point. But, like, ultimately, these people are getting something out of it. And if you can identify it and you can incorporate that into what you do, you will be stronger for it. So, like, instead of looking at Drake and being like, fuck him, you should be like, man, fuck him. How do I do that? Like, how do I literally make myself sound that way? And then when you try and fail, first of all, you'll realize, like, just how much harder it is to do Drake than it is. Like, you can listen to the song Map Screen Open on our album, Skip the Hate.
Skip the Hate, yeah.
And that is my full-blown attempt to just do Drake. I was like, this is as close to Drake as I can do.
For me,
and
it's,
don't sound nothing like Drake.
Yeah, for me, it's When Not Where on Hurricane Season is me doing my Drake.
My problem with Eminem. Yeah, of course. I can quantify it down to, like, almost a pitch. It is all power, no style, in the sense where he fucking tripped over a retard rock somewhere in the 2010s where he was like, man, if I just staccato, like, single syllable this whole motherfucking song. So growing up, I had, like, this obsession with Eminem whenever I was, like, fucking 10 or 11. Because I think every white kid that is somewhat into hip hop, they see that and, like, maybe there's some representation or maybe it's like, oh, my parents wouldn't want me listening to this. So there's something that attracts you to it. And then you get to a point where one of those wears off. And now you're left with the content. Joe Budden said it best. I'm a content kind of guy, and you haven't said shit in 10 years. Like,
that's awful. It's a terrible argument. His albums are so full of content, man. Nobody listens, though. Nobody listens to Bad Husband on Revival because they're like, oh, Revival's bad. Like, nobody listens to the content Zeus off of Music to be Murdered by.
Okay, but here's the thing.
Him addressing how Drake's fans are going to turn on him, and then it happens 6 months later. Only he can offer, like, perspective that he can offer. The content that he provides is the little gems of, like, I've had the highest debuts, and Drake, they're going to turn on you one day, too. Like, it doesn't seems like
the same content.
Like a big message. Yeah, but it's only he can be talking about it. Everyone else is dead. Like,
but that doesn't
died. XXX died. We don't have any legends that are alive.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean shit to me if the concept of the content isn't anything. Like, I'll try and explain it better. So,
no, I get you. I get you. Go ahead.
First of all, the way I look at it, right, it's like a Christmas present with really intricately created wrapping paper, and then I open it, and the present inside is just bullshit. So,
what did you want the present to be?
Okay, so let me give a better example of what I would consider, like, quality content, right?
Okay.
Here's something that would be similar to what Eminem's doing that I think hits way harder. So let's say, you know, horrorcore, killing somebody, you know, kind of Eminem style, right? Which I know isn't every single fucking song, but it pops up every now and then. A good version of that I've seen is Lil Ugly Mane on that fucking, what was that? He had a 2-part track that went into Boom Bap halfway through. Uneven Compromise. That was it. So Uneven Compromise is what I would fucking like out of Eminem, in the sense where it's, okay, if you're going to go down this path where you're just going to, have you guys heard that track, by the way? Anybody?
Not to the top of my head.
But that's fine. I don't need it.
Y'all motherfuckers got to do some homework. That motherfucking track, the whole idea of it is, the first track is him rapping from the perspective of this, like, 3-6 Mafia type character of, like, super devil worship, you know. This shit is deeper than the blood I'm submerged in, checkerboard floor, red curtain type shit, like that whole vibe. And then in the second track, he goes from the perspective of someone just walking down the street, sees his old friend, hangs out with him. Turns out his old friend is the guy that was the perspective of the first song. And it has this big twist ending at the end, right? It's a very well done concept and content. I have the last song I've heard from Eminem that has given me any positive emotional reaction was fucking Tone Deaf, because it was just goofy and fun. Everything else, for some reason, feels like goddamn needles inside my brain, and there's nothing I can pull out of it to keep with me. I don't know how to explain it.
No, I get what you're saying. So for me, where I'm looking for the content, I'm not looking for him to be a Mortal Technique. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want him to talk about how sad he is, because he lost his best friend from high school right when he got famous. He lost his group of friends when he couldn't hold up all of their careers. His wife cheated on him a dozen times and ended up losing his wife. He lost his kids for a few years. Once he got his kids back, they grew up. He lost his music career. He got his music career back when his kids stopped fucking being around all the time. The guy has nothing. And in interviews, he talks about how, like, every music that he listens to everything that comes out on New Music Fridays every week. He doesn't do anything. He has a house full of cassette tapes. So for me, like, Zeus is a perfect example of, like, a really impactful modern Eminem song. It's from the B-sides of Music to Be Murdered By, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
B-sides? Okay, yeah. So this song is literally, like, his reflection on his failures. A more popular example would be everybody dismissing Walk on Water. Like, even though the song is about his predictions that because he's now well adjusted and doesn't have the same fight in him, that everybody is going to dismiss Revival and say it's bad. The title single from that album was preempting this reaction because of the kind of stuff that he is making, being like not angry 20-year-old shit. And then Revival got bombed, and then Kamikaze is him reacting to all of the superficial complaints about Revival, and not even like the content stuff. It's more like, oh, I rhymed every word in that sentence. You guys are dumb. So Kamikaze is like a return to lyrical form, but I honestly, Revival, I think, is his most meaningful album. And it's so funny how historically it's not his best produced album. I don't think it's his most inspired, but I think it means the most, and nobody listened to it. So now a lot of people do have the opinion that he's just stopped saying meaningful things. And I think that a lot of it is backlash from the audience. Like, they want Tone Deaf. They don't want Bad Husband.
Oh, hold on. Everyone fucking hated Tone Deaf. And on the subject of fucking Revival, the first track, Walk on Water, the reason I hated it wasn't because of the lyrical content. It sounded like a fucking ass song. Like, it... No drums,
but it's
piano, Beyonce.
Like, that's the point of the song. He made a filler track so he could say some, like, poetry stuff.
But it didn't work.
To lead into an album. I think that's, like, the tragedy of it.
Well, if the goal of your single is to predict that people won't like your album, and you're right, it doesn't mean the album's fucking great. Like, the whole... So, just...
No, of course not. It's just, like, it's a little bit of a tragedy, and that's where I find, like, content, is that it was a tragedy. So the meta story of it is, like, makes the album better for me, and I'm guessing that you prefer your album content to be, like, textual and not subtextual or metatextual.
I mean,
right?
No, that's not true. I love it in all forms, but at the end of the day, the quality to me of anything I could get out of it, current, post listening to it, reflecting on it, if it's still below like a 3 or 4 level of engagement with my brain out of 10, it's a pack of ass. Like, so
I can understand that.
Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
I think the difference in perspective between the two of you really, like, cause Riley, I've heard you talk about Eminem a lot, and I think it seems to me like for you,
and with the caveat that he's not even like top 20 to me.
Really?
Like, he's not even, it's not that
he's
very
influential,
very
though.
Good. It's
but
that
I would put him in my top
important.
20. That's the thing.
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting. Even, I don't think there's a bad Eminem project. But I don't have him. Maybe he's in the top 20, but I was arguing with Dave about this the other day. Eminem is not in my top 10. There's so many better
He has to be in the top 10 for me, at least, because of his technical and writing ability, even though neither of those mean shit to me at the end of the day if the song's not enjoyable. But if you're talking about best rappers, he is the best at rapping. Like, it's the same way Floyd Money Mayweather, he may not be the most exciting boxer, but if it's a game of punch and not get punched, he's the best at that. You know what I'm saying?
No, he's the Mike Tyson of rap. Like, he's an athlete, for sure. There's guys out there that are just like these haymaker athletes. Like, I wouldn't put Pusha T in my top 10, but he bodied the fuck out of Drake.
I would. And, like, what the fuck? Did you never listen to Clips?
I love Clips.
And he's not in your top 10?
I love VA rap. Well, dude, maybe the difference here, though, is that I could probably write a list of 600 rappers and know, like, 50 or 60 of their discographies entirely. Like, I'm really into hip-hop, so it's hard to pocket it down to, like, popular artists. Because it's like, you're not even talking, like, okay, Dre Dogg, like, the original Dre. Like, that guy is closer to top 10 for me than Pusha. Pusha's, like, really popular. But Pusha's not, like, Kanye West. He's just...
Yeah, like, but really I wouldn't say Kanye West. So I love Kanye's production. Yeah, well, his influence, production, his vision, his scope, like, everything makes him so much bigger than just an artist, almost like a Prince Michael Jackson figure, in my opinion. But, like, the ability of rap, like, I haven't seen Kanye go into any of these, like, wild pockets or, like, really interesting, you know, I don't know how to put it, fucking, I haven't seen him rap at this super technical level, which I don't need to, by the way. Like, he can make his music exactly how he wants to make it, and it's going to sound better than fucking everything I've heard that year. But I wouldn't put fucking Kanye in my top 50 rappers. I would put him top of all fucking time and everything else, though.
We're going to have to come back into a whole podcast about rap, I think. Yeah, me, Dave, this is, me, Dave, this Trixie,
conversation
and
I know could last all day, but I gotta say that, like, when it comes to Eminem specifically, because I'm really torn. I want your Dave's take
real quick before yours, Trixie.
Okay, all right, Dave.
Because, Dave, you like Eminem too, but I think you do side closer to Kale on this, actually.
That is true. I think there is...
I'm always trying to convince you that Eminem's saying really important shit, and you're like, it's a fart joke. And I'm like, yeah, but it...
Well, okay, listen.
It's a contextual fart joke.
Yeah, but it was about his wife.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it's about the meta story of what's going on. It's about politics.
On the grand scale of my life, I am fairly new to hip-hop. I've only been, like, actively seeking it out to listen to it since I was, like, 12 or 13. So, not like...
Yeah, what the fuck do you mean 21? New? That's pretty seasoned, in my opinion.
I was six. Like, I was six when I was first rapping Biggie and Tupac. So that's the difference.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I think I have more of the outside perspective of making it a song and that it being on that, like, the very real, like, right in front of my face level, a good song. And I think Revival had, like, one good song. And I think a lot of Eminem albums have that, like, exactly what Kel said. So I'm agreeing that it's this intense gift, this talent that M has is just...
He's playing with your toys wrong.
Well, he's being overexerted in a way. Like, he's being made to fill niches that he's not, like... I don't know.
Right, like, they're putting up against radio rappers and stuff, right?
But I wouldn't even say it's, like, playing with your toys wrong. It's, I don't want to watch that fucking asshole play toys.
Okay. Well, like, what if he was, like, doing it like you want? Because you're a fan of the skill, right? So if he's playing with these Legos and he's just, like, building little cars, that's boring. Because, you know, he could be building, like machinery that rotates out of the Lego pieces.
I'd go on a lot more about this, but I also know that we got a show to run, and I don't want to clog it up with all my fucking bad takes over here.
Actually, the next parts of the show move right through this music-wise anyway.
Well, what Trixie think? I remember she had something to say.
Right, yes.
I gotta get in on Eminem.
Trixie, what do you think about Eminem?
So, I agree both with Riley and Dave in the sense that...
What about Bad Eater? Do you disagree with him?
Is he
a loser?
More so because I don't think that Eminem's quality level has changed as much as you think. But, like, for me, I've also never been somebody who listens to an Eminem album all the way through. Like, I grew up with the singles. I grew up with the Real Slim Shady, you know, My Name Is, the fun stuff that was for kids that played on TV. That's about how he's going to turn all your kids into rappers, exactly Hi like kids, him. Like
white America.
Yeah, and that was the first Eminem album that I ever, you know, actually heard was The Eminem Show. And I loved White America. That's a fucking phenomenal starting track.
It's a really good song.
I think right after that is something that's more of like a raunchy kind of sex jam that just for me at like age 13 meant nothing. And I just totally skipped over it, you know, and mostly concerned myself with the singles. And Without Me is easily like top 10 songs ever for me.
Hard agree.
I couldn't tell you how many times I've rapped it. Like, it has to be thousands. So, and that's not the only one of his songs I've rapped, you know, thousands of times. So, like,
right.
To me, well, as
so that's what Walk on Water is about, though, right? Like, he's, mm-hmm. Bitch, I made Stan.
Right. Yeah, but that's cringy as shit.
I'm going to fail your expectations because when I first set my expectations for myself, they were higher than anyone had ever set them before.
Right. Nobody has ever made something. He says on Kamikaze,
like, what's that tell you when a platinum sales are looked at as a failure? Like, he just, yep. His bar is too fucking high. Anyway, Trixie?
And that's what I'm kind of getting at here is that for me, it's I don't feel his bar is too high for me, because even though I grew up with those songs and always admired them, again, I was never like a full albums fan of his. And for a long time, I was an albums person, period. I did not fuck around with listening to singles at all, almost. I would have like a YouTube playlist of songs that aren't on albums I like that I like. But for the most part, I listen to whole albums front to back all the time. And so really it was when I like, you know, even when I got into hip hop big time, which is like 2012, 2013, since I never quite got to that, like, you know, it was Kendrick Lamar coming out with Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe that really got me like to explore hip hop more. And then Shade, my brother, started producing beats. And, you know, because of the fact that I could rap and now I suddenly had beats and I have recording equipment, it was like, oh, I can make music this way. Like, I just can. So this is the way I will do it. But, you know, I was getting more and more into it through clipping, Death Grips, stuff that I was finding out about through Anthony Fantano, who I had taken interest in because of his Good Kid, Mad City review and you know, me feeling like he got it perfectly. And
it's so
it.
Weird how similar our trajectory was. That's exactly almost how I got into it, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it was. That was when he was blowing up and you know, it was on the back of these seminal hip hop records, like, you know, all his Tyler, the Creator, Kanye West and Kendrick reviews have all been really huge and influenced culture a lot and Death Grips. And like, you know, I was not as into Tyler or Kanye initially. I got into them a little bit later. But, you know, so like I was much more resistant to a lot of the hip hop. Like when I got into it, it was like, OK, there's five or six artists I really like. And everything else, I'm like, I don't know about this sound. And then, you know, like Lil Yachty eventually made me kind of like, all right, now I'm starting to like the auto-tune thing, you know. And then Denzel Curry got me into the trap sound, you know, or it's like this stuff that initially was fucking terrifying to me just because it sounded like so insane and intense. But then, you know, when it's filtered through the fact that it's Denzel Curry performing it, that it's like, all right, well, this is palatable. You know, like, so all that kind of stuff got me deeper and deeper into it and more investigative. And then, of course, meeting Riley actually changed my outlook on a lot of stuff, because I've always been much more focused on the sound first before the lyrics. I want to listen to music that I like that has good rapping on it. But like, there's plenty of rappers who I think are phenomenal who I don't really listen to just because I don't like their beat choices or the sound or the message doesn't really do much for me. An artist like Ka might be a good example.
Yeah,
I think he's phenomenal.
I fucking hate Ka.
Doesn't do anything for me to listen to just because the atmosphere doesn't resonate with me, you know? Or like Your Old Droog, I think phenomenal. It's only made. Yeah.
You didn't like Jewelry?
I don't know what the name of it is. The one he did that was like a collab with a woman recently. I forgot the name. More Mother. That was.
No,
him,
you're
right?
You're
no,
thinking
I'm
Billy
thinking
Woods.
Of Billy Woods. Same case though. Your Droog and Billy Woods are both guys who I've never like. You know, Fantano loves them, and he talks about the depth of their lyrics. I see it. It's It's like too many worlds apart from me, I guess. Like, it's something I can listen to and appreciate, but like, I'm not going to listen to it all the time. Whereas I will listen to Denzel Curry all the time because I could tell that dude is like basically like on about the exact same shit I'm on about. So it's like the perfect soundtrack to what I'm doing because it is about what I'm doing, you know?
I don't want to call on an X-Wing.
So
we are going to talk about that too.
I feel like you would have a great hour-long podcast with Denzel where he just disappoints you by naming like top three animes, going like, man, I love anime, dog. No, fucking Naruto. I fucking love.
I mean, Denzel knows a lot of anime.
No, I know he does. It's a funny thought in my head, just him fucking disillusioning the shit out of you with like the mildest anime takes.
Top three, One Piece, Bleach, and Pokemon.
It would have been like that if I had talked to him in like 2016 or so, I think.
Man, Attack on Titan, that shit's goated.
Well, hold up. You've interviewed like 12 rappers on various sizes of like
local about their favorite anime.
And it was interesting because a lot of them were like boring, bad answers. But you were surprised a couple times, right?
I definitely remember being surprised by a couple of answers. I can't remember what they were off the top of my head.
Spice One said Samurai Champloo.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was damn.
Well, he was the one who had a whole like samurai afro samurai like shrine in his
afro
house.
Samurai right
yeah it was afro samurai and he was like I have all this afro samurai stuff. He strikes me as a dude who's probably seen all of the classic like Wu-Tang films, probably knows Lone Wolf and Cub, like
of course
he's talking
hip-hop
about
legend Spice One
sword. Yeah, so
that guy watches cartoons
for sure and plays a lot of Grand Theft Auto.
What are you gonna do? Tupac's dead. You have to play GTA and watch cartoons.
Reenact.
You can't keep
living. That's what I would do if Tupac was dead. Thank God he's not.
All right. So have we all had our say about Eminem?
Well, just to finish what I was saying about Eminem, you know, I think he's always been an amazing like singles artist, and I think that whether or not you get something out of each song is really going to depend on like how much that song's message connects with you. And like a lot of the stuff on his early albums, you know, I was aware of the stuff that was on his albums as a kid. It terrified the shit out of me because it's all about like beating his girlfriend and stuff. And I had no, you know, I didn't come from that kind of broken home environment to relate to that. To me, that was a scary thought, you know? Like all the really hyper violent shit that was really only touched on in his mainstream singles, you know, was repellent to me. And now, like, he has a lot of really interesting songs. One of Bird's favorite is Stepping Stones. I'm not sure which album
Stepping Stone. It's on Kamikaze.
Stepping Stone. Yeah, and that's a definitely a deeply thoughtful song. It's got a great melody. It's long and thorough and in depth about relationship
the
with
song.
D12.
About the relationship with D12.
Yeah. And it's you know, he really goes in deep and like digs up all
these feelings.
Music
is stupid, you guys. Music is math. Like it's the poetry part that makes it meaningful. I don't respect the music part.
You don't like IDM. You don't like fucking Burial.
Fuck math.
I respect the shit.
I don't like math.
I don't like Burial, but I respect the shit out of the fact that Eminem produces a lot of these beats too. Like a lot of the best beats he's made, that he's been on, he made. He made the fucking Lose Yourself.
Clean out your closet. Lose Yourself Without Me.
Fucking amazing beat. So yeah, I think he knows. There's a lot of people who shit on his beat choices because they are unpleasant. They're
well,
not
no, they
supposed
shit on him because
be
for the last 2 years he's only just chosen his friend Royce, the really good rapper, and had his friend Royce produce his albums. That's cringy.
I guess that's cringy. I'll say this:
they're like his weakest produced albums. I think
my
the Music to Be Murdered By ones.
My current favorite song like of Eminem's, just because it's newer to me and I'm not as worn out on it, is Ya Ya from I think Music to Be Murdered by Side B.
You mean Ya?
That's Side A.
Side A? Okay.
Ya Ya Ya.
It's got Black Thought and Royce da 5'9" and it's just nonstop God tier bars. It's a whole track of just like crazy.
Wait, Royce is top 10.
Royce is like just a basically like intro warm up, but it's the most like unpredictable, crazy flow. And it's really, really fun to rap along to. And to me, like that has always been the core of Eminem, is that he's enjoying it more than anybody else. He has the most fun making his mouth do the thing. And like in this song, The whole point of the song is basically just to shout out like all the greats, and be like, hey, we're like the last three gods standing, and we're gonna shout out every god that put us here, basically. And Black Thought goes on the most epic fucking verse imaginable. It just keeps going and going. There's a part where M shouts, "Keep going!" So he keeps going, and the hook is super catchy and memorable. There's like five people on the song total, I think.
Yeah.
Because there's someone singing the hook, someone doing like the shouts. And then M comes in, and like, you could say that like, in a way, these lyrics are kind of generically Eminem, but it's someone the doing most, the shouts. It's just the most over the top take on like, he starts off by just naming every school shooter ever and saying, yeah, I'm all of them, you know, but I hope an ambulance is in route. Papers, a hand grenade, soon as I pull the pin out. I am the Santa Fe, Mandalay, and Orlando, and Colorado, and Columbine, all combined into one. I don't walk a line, bitch, I won. I run.
Bitch, I run. Goddamn.
Man. So we don't got no time to waste, so come on and on. It's so fucking fun to rap along to, and it took practice. It took real practice, and I still haven't learned his whole verse, because the end of it is him just doing about 45 rapper names in
LL, like, Big L and Del, K Solo, Tretch and G Rap, DJ Polo, Tony D, ODB, Mo D, Run DMC, EDOG, EPMD, DOC, Ice T, Evil D, King T, UTFO, Schooly D, PE, BDP, YZ, Chili, Allah, Rakim and B.
Rakim and Eric, like B,
BIG, Paris, three times dope. Yeah, yeah. Look. Eminem, like I said, he's a scholar. Like, all he does is listen to hip-hop.
And DRE was like my GPS. Without him, that's I don't know where so I'd many be.
People give him the spot in the top 10 is because he just
the fact does that he created specifically the most difficult rap verse I have ever heard.
Sure.
Out of the names of every great rapper he could think of is God tier. No one's ever done it.
He does it every couple songs, you know? Like, that's the thing, though. Eminem did
There's a lot of power creep.
I got a list. He's gonna order the list that it's in. It goes Reggie, Jay-Z, Tupac, and Biggie, Andre from Outkast, Jada, Carl, Nas, and Dinmi. Yeah, but the list has gotten...
It's specifically that this verse is so difficult. It's so fucking hard. Like, it took me a lot of practice to get up to that part. I haven't gotten through that part. It's harder than Dark Souls. It is the Dark Souls of fucking rap verses.
I'm harder than Dark Souls right now, I tell you what.
And that to me is like, it's like, I don't really give a fuck if all the other songs he's made recently suck. The fact that that song is like, I could listen to it every single day and incrementally learn more of it. And like, I haven't gotten tired of it. And I think about the bars each time more and more. And like, you know,
I appreciate your autism for that. Like that specific type of,
I'm still bugged out on you not liking Burial. What the fuck?
It's too like, I don't know.
You didn't listen to like Rival Dealer or no, like Rival Dealer, fucking Truant, fucking Dolphins. Like,
I don't know if I've heard all of them.
The textures.
My brother Shade is a big Burial fan because he is big into the sonic texture element, and I think it's why he's a producer.
I got autism, brother. I got two tattoos on my body. One is a motherfucking puzzle piece, and the other one is a Splendor and Misery tattoo. I'm autistic to the core. I need the textures.
Clipping, Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah. See, David Diggs Burial. Is top 10. Like,
yeah. David so Diggs many is people that aren't David Diggs are not one top most 10. Influential rapper for me.
I fucking love every bit of Clipping. I fucking want them to make... That was the thing, is whenever they dropped their fucking space album, Splendor and Misery, I was like, I just want them to make fucking space albums. And then they dropped their Halloween album, and I was like, I just want them to make Halloween albums, and I don't know where it's going, but I'm buckling up. I want more.
It's going nowhere now. He's doing Snowpiercer for TV.
Hey guys, this episode ran pretty long. It's 3 hours, so we're cutting into multiple parts. This was part one. Next week will be part two of our episode with first ever guests, Bat Eater Music, and legendary hip-hop producer Cranberry Dave. Thanks for listening, and see you next time on Void Gazers.